Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Measured Science. I'm your host, Andrew Story, and today's podcast is co-hosted with Dave Russ, LECO's U.S. Separation Sciences Sales Manager. We're joined by Peter Vozka, Assistant Professor of Chemistry at California State Los Angeles, where he leads the Complex Chemical Composition Analysis Lab. Professor Vozka completed his PhD work at Purdue University, where he also spent time doing his postdoctoral research. At Purdue, he first encountered LECO's separation sciences equipment and progressed his research to Cal State LA as a faculty member in 2020. His research is centered around non-targeted analysis of a wide range of complex mixtures, including fuels, products from waste, depolymerization, fingerprints, and oil spills. This year, LGC recognized Professor Vozka as a rising star in separation sciences, and LECO launched a new laboratory in partnership with Cal State LA with several different pieces of LECO equipment. Dave, Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, hi, Andrew. Nice to meet you. And hi, Dave. Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here.
Yeah, we're really excited to be talking to you. And obviously, there's been a lot of work going on with LECO and with your lab. And we want to talk about a little bit of that today. We want to talk a little bit about your work and maybe some of your background. So tell us a little bit about your new lab, how it's been equipped, and why that is important for a successful research program.
Okay, so when I moved to Cal State LA, we started with just a single quadrupole GCM SFID, which I actually had to push the department to buy for teaching purposes, because we have like a lot of mass spec classes, but the mass spec, you know, equipment was really not that impressive here. So there was more like a teaching equipment. With my startup, I purchased LECO's GCGCFID, the QuadJet, as you call it now. And so that's how we started. And as you can say, we kind of lacked, or we've been missing the, you know, qualitative capability, a little bit like a better, you know, high resolution. And so I think what started everything was when we won the Pegasus BT giveaway program. And so that was the first time I talked to Farai, like shortly after I met Dave and other people from LECO. And we started this collaboration, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later. And thanks to this collaboration with LECO, we got the Pegasus BT4D GC-GC TAFMS. And we also, that instrument also came with the pyrolyzer, which is the high temperature desorption unit, which is amazing. We received this instrument a few weeks ago, and so we're still learning with it. So now that's how the lab is equipped. We hope we won't stop here, but so far we have, I don't want to say all of the, but most of the, you know, instrumentation that a lab can wish and can really be. Right now, the ball is on our court, so we really need to show some exciting, you know, results, some research, and use this equipment like in kind of a good way for the society.
So how is this working towards some major research objectives, maybe things that you've kind of always dreamed about doing with your research, and how's this equipment going to push that forward, I guess?
So we have multiple projects that we're working on. Our main project, I would say, involves the analysis of products from plastic waste depolymerization techniques, including pyrolysis and hydrothermal processing. This is a great project because there's a lot of universities working on this from the chemical engineering point of view. And so this allows us to work, you know, with universities like Purdue University, University of Chemistry and Technology in Prague, or the Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. And so they ship us the samples, we analyze these samples, we give them the feedback. It's kind of like a fine-tuning loop. So we're trying to find the best conditions to depolymerize, because the plastic waste is enormously growing. We don't know what to do with it. So one way might be, let's maybe depolymerize it in something useful. Mostly these mixtures are, I don't want to say mostly they are fuels, but they are very complex chemical mixtures. Some of them could be used as a fuel. Some of them are used as a different chemicals. And so, you know, having GC-GC, especially GC-GC, is the important part, which is only the separation part. But you really need to see all of these compounds if you want to somehow figure it out, the depolymerization pathways, if you want to fine-tune the conditions. So that's one thing that once we cannot do this without GCGC. We tried to do this for a while with GCGC FID, but that only works if the products you're getting is mostly hydrocarbons. Now, your question was like how, like our main goal, how can we accomplish this using your instrumentation, right? So what we learned with these fuels, because they are polymers, so once you depolymerize them, there are always double bonds, so alkenes. So there is a lot of alkenes in these fuels, which the world was not used to. Because whenever we take the crude oil, the petroleum-based fuels, there is really a few ppm or, you know, few weight percent of olefins because they are not very stable in nature. But once we do the depolymerization, we're getting up to 50 weight percent, like meaning like half of these compounds in the fuel, in these mixtures, these are alkenes. And so I think there is still like, I don't want to say huge, but there is a certain research gap in this like analytical chemistry part of this research field when we have problems to distinguish between cycloalkanes and, you know, alkenes with one or two double bonds. And it's not as straightforward. So we're developing actually a method. We are about to publish it soon, hopefully. And so that's like one our major goal that we've been focusing past, I would say, year or two. We are then moving to aromatic alkenes because this method works for non-aromatics. And I mean, it depends how much time you have because I can talk a lot with other projects.
Well, I mean, that sounds really important. It sounds like it's really at the nexus of analytical chemistry and a lot of the energy development that's, you know, so important for, the future and, different ways of powering our world. So
absolutely. You know, Peter, one of the cool stories is your interaction with your students and really just how important they are to your lab. So can you tell us a little bit about your students and how they utilize the equipment and some of the research that they're doing?
Yeah, so, Colstead LA is mostly, well, not mostly, but we have undergraduate students and we have master students. But the thing is, once you have an undergraduate student, you usually then push them to graduate and to go to better schools, right? You want them to go to R1 institutions. But sometimes they don't want to leave for different reasons. And so you may have them as a master students as well. So you can extend the period that you have these students. If you're lucky, or I mean, if you have money, you may have some postdocs. By the way, I'm looking for a postdoc. So if there is a postdoc listening right now with a GCGC experience, it's funded position. So please let me know. Sorry for this ad, guys, but I really need a postdoc, a good postdoc. Most of our students are first generation students, which is important. I was first generation student. They have very diverse background because this is California, and some of them, and I would say, I don't want to say most, but a lot of them comes from families with very low income. And so Colstead LA is, you know, known as number one in upward mobility. When I was actually, you know, invited for interview here, I had no idea what it means. So I had to Google. I was like, what is upward mobility? So for those who listening, they don't know. So we basically take the bottom low income students or families and we turn it in like very rich families. So the students know, if they get the education, if they really work hard for a few years, they can not just change their lives, but also the life of the whole family. Because here, the family, they really stick together. That's the reason why sometimes, most of the time, students, they don't want to go somewhere else. They don't want to leave, or they don't want to go so far from the family. And a lot of our students also, they have no idea what research is. So, I mean, you can guess it, right? If they're first-generation students, like, what is research? So we also need to kind of catch these students, these bright students, as soon as possible, kind of convey the information about what research is. They could be cool. It's not just like, you know, some science fiction that they see in the TV. And but the good thing about all of this, I know like a lot of this sounds sad maybe, but once they are involved, they grow exponentially and they are very hardworking. They don't take anything for granted. And the bet part is that they leave too quickly, as I said. So if you find a student in second year, you have 2 years, maybe 2.5, they graduate, they might come back as a master's student or they leave. So it's limited time, limited window. So right now I'm focusing on really getting these students as soon as possible. I have some freshman students right now. And again, amazing. Like they just really can work very hard and they're very dedicated. And so how they interact with the instrument. So yeah. Some of the students, when I get them like in second or third year, they were kind of surprised that they can, you know, work. I don't want to say play, but sometimes they really have to play with the instruments. But yeah, they do that. They do everything. So we moved, and that's another sad story, but we moved our lab twice already. Now we are in the final location. But the good thing is that we had to, you know, unconnect all the connections, bend the instruments, move them, connect them together, and students, they've been involved, so they help with all of this. So I have really some good students that they would be like great, like you know, LICO technicians. They troubleshoot. Right now we had a problem. There was a cable on the split when valve was broken. They found it. They discovered it. We also have we don't have the instruments the normal way that you used to. That they are toward the wall, so you can actually go behind the instruments, so you can see all the connections, all the million cables, you know, going from one side of the table to another. So they can really, they really involve in all of these things, in troubleshooting and also in changing anything. You need to change the inlet liner. All of these things students are, not all of them yet, but most of them are capable of doing, and I'm always happy to show them, and the students showing to other students. So they really are involved, not just in, you know, pushing the buttons, but also in the troubleshooting and maintaining the instruments.
Hey, Peter, how many students do you have in your lab right now?
That's a good question. People always ask me, and then I'm like, oh, how is it this semester? Because they graduate. So this semester, I have a lot of students, but most of them actually, unfortunately, graduating next semester. So right now I have 6 master's students and 7 undergraduate students.
So you're also looking for more undergrads to join.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, great. Great. I think it's really great in undergrad, especially to get a lot of experience with instrumentation. That was certainly my experience as an undergraduate at the College of Worcester as well. And I think that, you know, learning not just to use them on a daily basis, but also maintain them in an appropriate way is, you know, critical to knowing how it's going to be actually operating these instruments once you get out of out of school.
When I was when I was undergraduate student, so that was in Czech Republic. It's the best school in chemistry, but it still lacks this like hands-on experiences, I would say, because I didn't like, the only time I played with the instrument, or you know, I saying play, but when I used the instrument like myself, was when I was writing my undergraduate thesis. So that was the very last semester, like before we did some like labs that you usually do, but it was not that I would be, you know, working with instrument on a daily basis. And even though when the PI is not there. So I think the world is getting faster. Everything is, you know, improving and growing so fast. So I think they need to be exposed. Even at high school, if not probably to GC, but some of the small techniques, I think that can definitely improve the knowledge and the passion for this field.
So I guess what's next for your lab? You have all the equipment there, and you have your students are doing great research. What do you kind of view as the cutting edge of your work going forward?
So what's next in the short term? We really need to finish the quantitative analysis method for aliphatic olefins in fuels. We already presented these results at several conferences. We've been able to validate this method. And the last thing is we're waiting for results from GCGC TAFMS. So once we have those results, we include them in the manuscript and finally push the manuscript to journal. In the meantime, we start focusing on aromatic olefins because we believe that both of these methods, or method for both non-aromatic and aromatic olefins, is missing in the literature. There are some ASTM approved methods, but these are not very sophisticated or detailed enough, and petroleum engineering field needs such methods. In the meantime, we expanding the knowledge about the compounds, organic compounds adsorb on microplastics. And I don't know if you heard about it, but in 2022, California approved the first comprehensive microplastic strategy in the nation. And this strategy does not talk about the compounds adsorbed on microplastics or what type of compounds microplastics can adsorb, but we believe that's the next step. And so we really want to understand this and to see what type of compounds on what type of microplastics and how these compounds interact with the environment, no matter if it's in human body or, you know, in LA River. just in general. We already started working on a project that focuses on chemical makeup and latent fingerprints, human fingerprints. Here on campus, we have a California Forensic Science Institute, which is great because the forensic science students, they can work with real samples on real forensic cases. So it's pretty awesome. We also beta testing Leikos Chromatoff Tile software for GC-GCFID. And a few days ago, I actually signed an NDA for another Leikos software. So I leave it at that, but my students are really, really amazed and happy being part of, you know, testing software that will be used worldwide. So that's another thing. I need to graduate several of my students, which is a great news, but many of them will graduate next semester. And in the long term, so I always try to promote the adoption of novel GC-GC separations in new applications and various research fields, because there is so much that these techniques can offer to people who may not have worked with them in the past. And so we will be doing several workshops. So one of the workshop is for our Colster LA students. So it will be 5 days workshop, bootcamp style, morning and afternoon session when students will be learning with GC-GC techniques. I will be also doing a workshop for CSU Coast faculty. So this will be just 2 days workshop, but it won't happen 2 days in a row. There will be a break in between, and the faculty would be, they would be able to submit samples to us. We will analyze the samples and show them how GC-GC can advance and improve the research. And then the most important, which I'm looking the most, is that we are bringing the multidimensional chromatography workshop to West Coast next year in January.
That's great, Peter. And you actually had a great lead-in. You know, this year, actually 2024, you'll be hosting the Multidimensional Chromatography Forum. Can you share a little bit about that, what it is and what you're planning for it?
Yes. So yes, I would be very happy to share some news about the MDCW. So I've been invited as a keynote speaker last year, and I became the committee member for this year. But the whole shootout, the whole, you know, applause should go to Dr. Sperol, Stefanuto, and Stoll. They have been doing this conference for several years. It's been always an amazing event for this, you know, GC-GC and LC-LC community to come together. And so I'm very humbled, very proud to be part of the conference this year. And I really cannot wait for this to happen in January. So January 10 to 12, for those who never heard about this, you probably seen a lot of this ad pollution from us. If not, find us on LinkedIn and you will. So what's going to happen? So a lot of amazing researchers are coming. I've already seen a lot of great abstracts. This is a smaller conference, so you can really meet with these people, with everyone, and talk to everyone in person. This event is for 3 days, so you will have a lot of time, you know, to brainstorm some ideas, so to listen all the talks and really enjoy this. Every year, the committee is trying to implement some new ideas. So this year, we hope we will be able to bring several food trucks. Leiko will be hosting the wine tasting event. This is a scientific way of wine tasting. So whenever Leiko does these events, it's usually a huge success. There will be, of course, poster sessions, discussion groups, flash talks, long talks, or regular talks. This year, we also partnered with Lab Rules. And so everything will be posted on their website. Also, everything has been posted from the last year. So if you want to kind of get a peek about what to expect, go and find these videos. And so just in general, to really conclude this, a lot of exciting research from the GC-GC and LC-LC research world. And I know I talk a lot about fuels, but this the fuel research is usually only a small part of this event. There is a lot of other research fields. And yeah, if you can, please join us.
That's great. And there's still time for people to register?
Definitely. What I didn't mention, but the registration is free, which is kind of people are always like, okay, will there be at least coffee? Yeah, there will be coffee, wine, water, lunch, dinners. So yeah, it's amazing. If you local, definitely register. And if you're not, you know, whenever you go to these ACS conferences, you pay for registration. So maybe people can think about spending the time to come here, spending the funds to come here. And then, yeah, registration is free.
Yeah, I think those community conferences are great. They're amazing opportunities to make new contacts and build potential collaborations that is often lost in some of the larger conferences. I mean, obviously, we love some of the large conferences as well, but
yeah.
It's just that close contact that can build throughout throughout a workshop like that. That's really something special. So, yeah, it sounds like a great event.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, Peter, one of the cool things that I saw when I came to visit your lab was a little twofold. One, it was the ownership that your students have with your laboratory in terms of just rolling up their sleeves and utilizing and using the instrument, but two is the creative ideas that they came up with in the lab. And I'm going to kind of lead on a little bit, and I'm kind of referring a little bit to the stickers on the side of the instrument, as well as, you know, even some of the statues or Lego pieces that you have kind of throughout the lab. You know, it was something that was kind of neat. Maybe you could kind of expand a little bit about that.
Yeah, I will definitely talk about it. So this is the, I would say, non-scientific part of our lab, and I'll explain why I believe that, but I know that students really appreciate these small things. So what they've mentioned is, so I always want my current or new students to feel welcome in the lab. And so as you know, part of celebrating the diversity, we have a world map on the door. And whenever students from a different country joins the lab, they would put a little pin with a flag to this map. And so the students really like these ideas. And look, listen to this, guys. This is amazing. So my students, they actually submitted, it was an open competition by the Chemistry and Engineering News journal or magazine. And so they submitted pictures. And actually, two pictures were added to the last week issue. So that's when our lab for the first time appeared in this CNN magazine. And so that's one thing. So that's celebrating the diversity. But I always want to celebrate the success of the students. And so that's the another thing that they've mentioned. So what we do, each of our GC or GCGC instrument on the side, we have a sticker for a journal paper, conference, oral presentation, and poster and thesis. And whenever student publish a paper or students publish a paper, they put little sticker next to these stickers. And so the more stickers, meaning this instrument was involved in more research. So they basically compete the instruments against each other this way. And then, but check our Instagram page. We have all these pictures there. And sometimes, if you check the Instagram, so sometimes it actually looks like we play more with Lego than with Lego. And so that started, I think that started with me, because Lego actually is made in Czech Republic. That's where I'm from. And so I was not from, you know, very rich family. So we couldn't afford to buy Lego when I was a kid. And so I started buying Legos now because I really love, this is the way I probably, you know, relax. And that's my little like hobby. So I put Lego together. And since my wife hates these being in our house, so I need to put them somewhere. And so I brought them to the lab, and then students kind of fall in love into Lego, I would say, as well. So sometimes we put Lego together while, you know, the instruments are running, or once the instruments are venting or something like that. And so I think some of them still enjoy this. So the second picture that got into CNN magazine was our GC MSFID with a little Lego flower on top of the hydrogen generator. But yeah, that's what we do if we don't talk science.
Do you have any advice for early career researchers on things that you found to help bring about success in your time in science?
Well, I don't feel like giving advices to early career researchers, but I can tell you my story. So, as a PhD student and a postdoc, I felt that writing papers is more powerful and has more weight in the research in our research field than going to conferences and present posters and oral presentations. And also for some early career researchers, it might be some way uncomfortable to present in front of huge audience. But all of this changed when I became the faculty member here at Colset LA, and I went to my first larger conference, which was the ACS Chicago in fall 2022. And there, because there was a GC, there is every fall, there is usually the GC session. And so I went there, my student presented our research, and then we went for dinner with all of these, or most of these people from the GC session. And that's when the things start moving. It was amazing. The GC, world is not that huge, and the atmosphere is always welcoming. It's so warm, everyone is so supportive, and I really enjoy this. And since then, I'm trying to go to most of these GC small conferences, or the ACS when there is a GC session. And I remember in ACS Chicago in 2022, I was blessed, or I've been very blessed, to meet Dr. Caitlin Perrault. She became my mentor and started giving me tips and advices and pushing me to apply to, awards, grants, and things like that. And I think that is very important for young scientists to have such support. At the end, you have to do all these things yourself. But if you have someone who can help you, push you a little, you have someone you can talk to about the research that you do, I think that's just it's amazing. And as Andrew already said, a lot of these collaborations and a lot of these ideas are actually happening there, because you listening to other people talks, and you can kind of feel like, maybe, well, if we connect this together, that might work. So if I should give you an advice, come to multidimensional chromatography workshop next year, January 2024, because that could be your starting point. That's a smaller conference, a lot of great researchers, and I promise you the atmosphere will be very welcome and very warm, and you will enjoy it.
What's the most interesting sample that you've analyzed?
So honestly, our samples that we work on daily basis are kind of cool, if you will. But if I should choose some of the most exciting samples or interesting samples. So as a PhD student and postdoc, I analyzed jet fuel samples from each US Navy military base. So that was kind of exciting. And as well, so this part was classified. So let me put it this way. It was a complex sample that was placed in a nuclear reactor. And so the goal was to compare the chemical composition before and after to see if there is any change in the composition in case such samples would be close to some nuclear explosion. And so in California, since I'm from Europe, not very, Czech Republic is not very close to ocean or sea. So when the Huntington Beach oil spill happened a few years ago, it was kind of amazing to be there in the real time and start collecting the samples immediately after the disaster. So we collected samples from the beach sands and also from the wetlands. We also analyzed fingerprint samples almost on a daily basis. And next week, I'm meeting actually a person from Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. And so maybe we will come up with some collaboration there, which I think would be also very exciting.
That's very cool. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us? It's been a great conversation so far.
Yes, and this is actually a true story. So a few minutes ago, I received a message from my student that they have fixed the leak in our two systems that they have been working on past 3 weeks. And so, long story short, the leak was actually caused by the helium tank that was not very ultra high purity. And we have two systems. One is GC TUF-MS. The other one is GC by GC TUF-MS. And they are both connected to one helium line. So we actually started there. We changed the tank, the cylinder. It didn't work out. So then we have had to, you know, vent the systems, cap the transfer line, pump the systems down, and, you know, do all these like tuning. None of this worked. And after 3 weeks, once we said, okay, let's try another helium tank or cylinder, we actually were, we've been able to discover that it's coming from there. And so that was the time when I realized how troubleshooting unavoidable is, and also how troubleshooting is important part of being an analytical chemist. And although my students couldn't run their samples past 3 weeks, and but that's what they believe the research is, right? They need to run the samples, get the results, get some conclusions. But although they couldn't do this, I think they still learn a lot. And so the message here is, so if you are a student or early career faculty member, and you are getting depressed because, you know, you have to troubleshoot your instruments and you're actually not running, you're injecting your samples, don't, because you might be learning more than you actually realizing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like that was most of my doctoral research, though.
Yeah. And then you feel like you did nothing, but you actually did, right? And you learn a lot. So,
Exactly.
Peter, one of the things, too, that from our conversations is some of your students are looking for their next steps, right? You know, maybe you can share a little bit about, you know, what some of your students are looking for from a next step point of view, and maybe how, you know, this community could help them.
Oh, definitely. Since several of my students graduate next semester, I think that would be a great opportunity if there are any listeners interested in, you know, having such students. So I know that at least one undergraduate and master student are looking for PhD programs. And so my graduate student, Genesis, she already talked to several PIs, and they are usually very impressed to know that, you know, my students, they can maintain and troubleshoot these instruments. And so I think it's very important. And we didn't talk about this collaboration between LECO and my lab a lot, but we created this, you know, LECO Complex Chemical Composition Analysis Lab here on campus. And it's actually a research and training facility. So the training part is a huge part of this collaboration, because the goal is to train, you know, future experts in GC-GC field. And so I know that my students, they also want to go to industry. So I have a lot of very smart and bright students that are very capable in troubleshooting. I have a student, his name is Hung. So he discovered that we have a broken cable on split vent valve. He just, you know, found that, ran some tests. Then we fix that as well. So I know students are interested in industry positions as well as positions, you know, in companies that are producing or making analytical instruments. And I think that for these students, I hope that there is a lot of opportunity, and I hope that we will hear about these students in the future, and then we all will be proud of them.
So if you're listening and any of those types of students seem like the types of people that you'd be interested in hiring, you know, feel free to reach out to Peter. I'm sure he'd be happy to put you in touch as well. So I guess we can wrap up here unless there's anything else you guys have. Well, if you are interested in any of LECO's equipment that you heard about on today's podcast, visit LECO.com for more information. Links to Professor Vazquez's website and information about the multidimensional chromatography workshop coming up in January 2024 at Professor Vazquez's lab are going to be in the show notes. Thank you for joining this episode of Measured Science. We hope you can join us again soon to cover new and emerging topics in chemical analysis. Thank you.